district, a man by the name of Congressman O'Neill, who is going to be a very important person in the new Congress. And I understand that he hasn't heard that much from his constituency, which includes Cambridge, about the Vietnam War lately. And here's a man who can really swing some weight, and there's a lot of people who can swing some weight in the community if they do something, and they don't need to wait for leaders or wait for offices. Just
well, there is going to be a demonstration at 1 p.m. on New Year's Day. That's Monday, January the 1st, which is going to be marching to the home of Congressman Tip O'Neill of Cambridge and Somerville. It starts at the Star Market for you people in the Boston area. It starts at the Star Market in Porter Square at 1 p.m. New Year's Day. Like Tom just told you, Congressman O'Neill is the new majority leader of the House, and he's in a position of persuasion and influence, and it's believed that he could really do some good if you let him know, as his constituency, how you all feel. The demands are that Congress immediately cut off all funds for the war, and they will be demanding that the U.S. sign the agreement negotiated in October between Vietnam and Kissinger. This is WBCI, BCN in Boston, and WBAI in New York. I'd like to ask, what we're going to do is we're going to probably be switching off of New York in about 10 minutes. And we get two calls from New York on this and one from Boston. When we announced today that you were coming here for a talk tonight, we received a lot of calls, mostly from women who seem to be identified with feminist politics, asking us to bring up the subject in some way of your highly publicized marriage plans. And do you see any ambiguities involved there, either in supporting marriage as an institution, the nuclear family concept, or in dramatizing it by press announcements, or is there like a paradox there, a contradiction there? This is what.
I don't think. Well. I don't think that it's necessarily a bad institution. It's not one that I'm interested in pushing particularly. I think it's a personal decision for people to make, whether they want to get married or not. And I hope that the fact that we're getting married wouldn't necessarily lead people to believe that that's something that we think people should do or not do. I don't think it's an issue on which I personally anyway would take a stand to argue about. I don't think it's important. We wanted to get married, so we're getting married, and it's not necessarily an answer. I've been married before.
Tom?
I can't believe people are calling about it.
Yeah.
The publicity comes from the media. It's the most realistic thing to do. That's all I'll say about it. I think it'll be proven it's the most realistic thing to do. But that it should concern anyone during the bombing of Hanoi
I'd like to say one thing, and I'm sure that it'll raise some flack, but I think that one of the problems, I think it's a bad sign that, and one of the reasons why what is called a feminist movement is isolated at a time like the particular time that we're living through right now, to raise the question of marriage as something to be argued about politically is I think gonna isolate us. I'm involved in the women's movement. I think that what we have to do is turn our attentions to an area in which people and particularly women are carrying out the most crucial struggle in the world today, and which is very linked to what it is that women are fighting for in this country. And that is what we have to talk about, not the institution of marriage.
It's
not average women that are asking that question. It's not masses of women in this country that are asking that question. Yeah. I mean, fortunately, they are concerned about bombing in Vietnam.
The new left, the whole thing about the ambiguities of your personal life not being a conflict with your political life, the two actually being together and inseparable, I guess, was what caused that question to be asked. You know, that I think from that point of view, it's interesting. But I would like to get back to the war thing for a little bit, if we can. What was the European response to... well, actually, we talked about that. Jane mentioned that all these different countries were... So we've sort of taken care of that question. Here's one that's interesting. Both of you in your lifetimes went through very profound changes of consciousness about politics and history, society, and the way you have to lead your own lives. You were radicalized at very different times and in very different ways, but maybe you can talk about how that process of change takes place and how it is spread throughout a generation, a country, a people, younger or old, becoming radicalized in these early years of the 70s in the same way and the same pace as people did in the late 60s. People, like, how does that occur? Like, people...
I'll talk about me very rapidly, if I can. I'm the older person here, and I was a generation that tended to be more cynical, because when I was a student, it was during the McCarthy era, and I grew up extremely apathetic and cynical, and what could I do after all? You know, why bother to even find out what's going on, because I can't affect it anyway, even if I knew. And at a very late age, the reason that I changed was because there were masses and masses and masses of people in this country who were forcing people like myself to think about the question of Vietnam. I was a dropout. I lived in Europe. And I can even remember the day that that I started to turn around. I saw on French television a newsreel film of 500,000 people marching on the Pentagon, women in the lead, marching right up to the bayonets, and getting beaten up. And I thought, things have changed a lot since when I lived in that country, and I'd better start thinking about what's going on. And particularly what changed me was soldiers, guys who were coming back from Vietnam, either back to the United States because their duty was over, or deserting and coming to France where I was, and were talking about what was going on. And this is the kind of thing, this people, just people, getting out and talking and arguing and debating and creating controversy in many, many different ways that force people like me, closed off. I was at the time floating through space as Barbarella, and so it wasn't too easy to get to me, but thank God there was a peace movement in this country, you know, and that's, you never know who it is you're going to influence. You never know, you know, whose mind you're going to change, and we shouldn't get discouraged because, you know, change is a process. It's slow. But the fact that, I mean, today, people who were Goldwater Republicans, people who were hawks not so long ago, people like me who didn't care one way or the other, are changing.
Attorney General Clark, isn't he an example of that? Former Ramsey Clark, wasn't he? It seems like I remember growing up that he was like, I seem to picture him as a pig. And then all of a sudden, like, he's one of the leaders of the peace movement. Didn't he work for Johnson, or was it earlier than that? Was it Kennedy? Who was he with?
He indicted Dr. Spock and the others, Michael Ferber, right
sure.
here in the city of Boston for resisting the draft. And today he's representing people in jails like the Berrigans. And
was he always like that, or did he just, and he had to play a certain role in office? Or, like, are these people?
I think almost everyone has a capacity to change, and they have decent instincts, and they have a heart, and we should have some humility about it. Everybody, no one is born anti-war. Everyone becomes anti-war, and when they become anti-war is a matter of the circumstances that they find themselves in, and if they don't change fast enough, it may not be so much their fault. It may be the fault of the people who are trying to change them. You never know.
What radicalized you? Was it one thing or just a whole bunch of?
I'd prefer not to talk about myself so much because I think it's a generation phenomena there. I think a lot of people were changed by what they went through in the 60s. And
Kennedy?
What's really curious is that a lot of people now maybe are cynical, like you were saying, people feeling drained. And if I understood what Jane was just saying, that it's a bad time to feel drained because you've brought about
the changes so far.
Enormous changes. Yeah. If GIs who are killing Vietnamese can face up to that, change themselves drastically around, form Vietnam Veterans Against the War, or Dan Ellsberg or Tony Russo can plan a war and start a war and help carry a war out and then face that and change themselves. And if these people are now being indicted, framed, taken off to trial all across America, it's a result of a lot of people.
200 Air Force personnel, including pilots in Thailand, signed a petition demanding that Nixon sign the peace agreements. We just read in the New York Times today that on Guam, this group of highly elite pilots and personnel who fly B-52s, I mean, cost tens of thousands of dollars to send these people through special school and training. Sabotage is going on. These guys are trying to find ways of, I'm not saying all of them, but if it says in the New York Times that there's a tendency now for guys to try to get out of flying on these missions and that there's sabotage going on, that's probably just the tip of the iceberg. And, the mass GI movement is a phenomenon that should give us all huge encouragement and optimism.
There was a organizing project here in Westover at the Air Force Base not so long ago, and I'm sure that the effect of that project on the consciousness of those guys was real, and some of them are missing in action now. Some of them may be among the people who are trying to resist. One of the programs that we tried to stress at our meeting is bringing to people's attention the plight and the really courageous activity of a lot of these servicemen in the Navy and the Air Force. In California, there are trials of people who are charged with sabotaging destroyers and aircraft carriers, keeping them out of Vietnam. This is a very real problem for Nixon. He has to have somebody to carry out the war. One reason that he pulled so many troops out of ground duty was because of the morale problems and the resistance, and now the same thing is starting to happen in the Air Force and the Navy. And of course, it's not so visible to us. Who's there to cover it? These guys don't have civil liberties or many ways to make what they're doing known to everyone, but it's a sign of great importance, and people should realize that if the military at the rank and file level is affected by the peace movement, then certainly this is not a time to feel drained. It's much harder for them to resist than for us to.
This is WBCN in Boston and WBAI in New York. I'm Charles Lacordaire. I'm sitting here talking with Tom Hayden and Jane Fonda. And Bob Ross objects to questions. Who's Bob Ross? Bob Ross?
Bob Ross, I think, is a teacher at college here in Massachusetts. What is that a message about?
He objected to personal questions about your marriage. Don't turn them into a something-something celebrities. Can't read it.
Thank you, Bob.
Okay, Inauguration Day, a demonstration. Could we go into that a little bit? Are there going to be buses from different cities? How many people do you expect? How many people is Nixon invited?
At the meeting that we held with all the other national groups, it was decided that there should be a joint call for people to participate in action both in Washington and in their hometowns at that time to focus on the question of whether we're going to have peace or four more years of war, what's being inaugurated. And we're not interested, at least speaking for our own group that was at this meeting, so much in the numbers of people who go to Washington as we are in the spirit of people and the amount of concrete activity, especially giving out information, raising money for medical aid, going to see their congressman, putting pressure on that way. And this whole period from now to the 21st, as you can tell, is going to be one in which the Vietnam War is really on everybody's mind, so it's a maximum time for moving people, talking with people, trying to explain the war. And if it can be culminated with effective action in Washington, so much the better. But I hope the newspapers aren't just into a numbers game, going to count how many people go to Washington or something like that. I think that would be a misunderstanding of what we're about. A lot of people want to ask, is the peace movement dead and so forth? And we should be asking, is there a government that represents us? Is there anybody in the Congress that is going to do something? Is the government dead? And there are many ways to raise that question at the community level, by writing letters to editors, by seeing congressmen. And if it can be focused at the time of Nixon's inauguration, that's very good. Very, very good, and we've endorsed that. But our basic thrust is to try to get people to see what we should have seen all along, that Vietnam really is the focal point of all the contradictions and difficulties that we feel, and we have to work on a steady basis on the community level against it for as long as it takes.
I'd like to say something, an experience that I had or something that I learned while I was in North Vietnam in July, because it's important for us today when a lot of people feel guilty about being in this country, guilty about being Americans. One of the reasons why we're getting numb and turning away from Vietnam. When I was there, I felt a certain wariness about going into the countryside because I didn't know how people were going to react to having an American come into an area that had been bombed. And one of the things that surprised me is that I didn't encounter any hostility. On the contrary, people expressed a great deal of gratitude. I mean, literally, a woman came up to me in a little village that had been bombed, and she took my hand, and she said, "Thank the people in the United States who are speaking out against the war." And this kind of very spontaneous expression of solidarity with the American people from a people who are under American bombs surprised me a great deal, and I wanted to understand why this was so. And I discovered it through the committee that had invited me to North Vietnam, which is called the Committee of Solidarity with the American People. And this committee's work is to educate the people all over the countryside about who we are, who the people of the United States are. And they do this in many different ways, through plays, for example. One afternoon in Hanoi, during a bombing raid, I saw a play in Vietnamese. It was Arthur Miller's play, All My Sons, being performed in Vietnamese by a troupe of actors and actresses that had come from the countryside where they'd been putting on this play for peasants. And it's a play about social responsibility. It's a play about the different forces that exist in American society, the forces that will do anything to keep their money, including being responsible for people's debts.
The kid's father makes bombs.
That's right.
And the
kid condemns his father for doing this. And it shows these kind of contradictions. It lays them open. It's a play by Arthur Miller. And they translate our best writers. They translate Steinbeck and Hemingway and Faulkner and Mark Twain. And it's read by the people. My interpreter's favorite author is Hemingway. And peasants read these books. They're familiar with The Old Man and the Sea. And the other day when
a Vietnamese friend told us that at a very famous bridge, the Ham Rong Bridge in North Vietnam, which has always been bombed by the Air Force, a little boy, young boy, was killed there not so long ago, and they picked up his body. He had been reading Huck Finn, which had been translated into Vietnamese.
This is a very startling and moving thing when you see these people that are, their homes are being bombed, and yet they don't hate us because there is this work being carried out. They know about the peace movement. I was there just after the ring around the Congress, where women and children went to Washington and formed a ring around Congress demanding that funds be cut off. They knew about vets that had been arrested in L.A. I mean, it was that kind of information they were aware. They knew about the GI movement. And I asked the committee, I said, how is it that in the face of this massive destruction of your country and the kind of work that you have to do just to survive and rebuild, that you are doing this kind of educational work? And they said, if our people ever learn to hate, we're lost. They said, our greatest strength is that we have always known who our enemy is, and we know that our enemy is not the American people. We make the distinction between the American people and the American government. And that did a lot for me, because it showed me that I, as every other American, we have to hang on to what we feel about ourselves and what we feel is right and good about the country. I mean, there are good, the ideals upon which we were founded have to be fought for. We have to make democracy work. And there is a difference between us and the people that are betraying those ideals. And And, I mean, I think there are lessons to be learned from this view, this attitude that the Vietnamese people take about us. And it also says a great deal about patience and the kind of work that is necessary to resist these kind of forces, a slow, patient work of building understanding, of giving faces to the people 10,000 miles away. They've given us a face. They know about our authors. They know about our plays. They're learning about our culture. They know about our peace movement. They who are under our bomb, should we not take the time to know who they are, know the names of their cities, know who the Vietnamese people are and why they're struggling? And that will give us strength to be able to fight, since we're fighting against the same thing.
Thank you, Jane Fonda and Tom Hayden. This WBAI in New York will be leaving us now. We're going to start doing some music for our Boston audience. We will be staying here and sitting and rapping with Tom and Jane for just another half hour or so, 20 minutes or so. So if you're from New York, thank you for listening in.
You just heard an interview with Tom Hayden and Jane Fonda of the Indochina Peace Campaign about the resumption of massive bombing of North Vietnam and the status of peace negotiations. It was broadcast live from WBCN-FM in Boston. This is Jan Legnido for WBAI's Public Affairs Department.
York.
which never saw the seas. It flows through jungles around the trees. Some say it's yellow, some say red. It will not matter when we're dead. How many dead men will it take to build a dike that will not break? How many children must we kill before we make the waves stand still? Though miracles come high today, we have the wherewithal to pay. It takes them off the streets, you know, to places they would never go alone. It gives them useful trade. The lucky boy. I'm going out to stem the tide. Some say it's yellow, some say red. It will not matter when we're dead.
We should be going to the press conference momentarily.
We